Welcome to the new year. Oh my goodness, I am so excited for you. I'm so excited. The reason that you are listening to an organization podcast in the beginning of the new year is because you are ready to get organized. And 87% of Americans believe organization is a learnable skill, yet only 13 to 18% of those same Americans feel like they're organized in any category. And here's why. Organization is so much more than just a decluttering binge or living a minimalist life. It's actually a skill you learn, like learning a foreign language. I have been spending the last 11 years really diving into how do we get organized? Where do we get stuck? What are the skills everyone needs to learn? And what are skills that only certain people need in certain phases of life? Over all of this time, I've created my own glossary. Like, I had to redefine words and create scenarios that would make you think about your house differently so you could see organization in a different light. And you'd be able to take action and actually learn the skill of organizing. So that's what we're going to do here in January. The first half of the month are podcasts that I've recorded before this year that I'm going to re-air. They're glossary episodes 1 through 11. And then I have 5 new glossary episodes for you, all of the learnings that we gained in the last year. So this is a very bingeable month. There will be a lot of podcasts for you to come back and listen to this month and a lot of new learnings. And don't worry, if you've already heard these podcasts before when they were originally recorded, or even if you've listened to them a couple of times, re-listening to these glossary podcasts are going to, number one, let you see how far you've come in learning this whole new skill of organization. Some of the things I say are now second nature to you. They may actually be in your own vernacular. And you'll hear things differently. You may be in a different phase of life now, or you may not have heard things the first time through when you listen to the podcast. So this January, we're all going to go back to school together and learn the glossary of what it means to truly take back your life and live an organized life. Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Today, in this episode of the Organized 365 Glossary, we are going to define quite a few new terms, not just for Organized 365, but really for the world, which is awesome and humbling to say. But I have had this vision for the last 4 years of what Organized 365 would do and bring to the organization industry, specifically home organization. So I want to start this by reading what the Organized 365 mission and vision are, and then I'll talk to you about what we're doing in research. So the Organized 365 mission is to help busy people in all phases of life learn the functional skills of home and paper organization in 1 year with organizing systems that work. And by developing these skills, people will have the time to pursue their passions and unique gifting and calling. And our vision of how we're going to do this, which I stated 4 years ago, but is just becoming manifest today, is that through research, targeted surveys, and data analysis, Organize 365 will bring to light the organizational needs of individuals. Podcast conversations and thought leadership will shape and develop the discussion about the stuff in American homes. As the trusted leader in home and paper organization, Organize 365 will be the go-to resource for busy individuals, future professional organizers, home organizational brands, and the media. Organize 365 will help individuals finally get organized with home and paper organization courses and products that combine teaching and applications of practical organization principles. So when I wrote that 4 years ago, that we would do this through research, targeted surveys, and data analysis, I had no idea how you did research, surveys, and data analysis. Like, no clue. 1 year ago. No clue. I put in episode 365, my 3 year vivid vision, in which we finally were going to start taking action on doing this research back in the fall of 2020. And luckily for me, Sarah was listening and she emailed me and she said, "Hey, I've been thinking you should do research and I have a PhD and I am a researcher and I can help you do academic research." Now, this is how little I knew. I didn't realize there were different kinds of research. I didn't realize there was marketing research and academic research and there's clinical research, there's all kinds of research. And what I had done is I had found a marketing research company that was going to do a marketing survey on home organization. And Sarah reached out and was able to join the Organize 365 staff quick enough for us to turn what was going to be a marketing research study into a true academic research study that is backed by Harrisburg University. We have an IRB through them, and we used third party to collect all of our data and did everything that we need in order to have an academic study. Here's what I wanted. I just wanted to do a survey to show that women are doing the majority of the work at home. That is not what I did, and that is not what I found. But I naively thought it was as simple as that. Look. The women are doing the majority of the work. Let's explain what the work is, and then we could share it more at home. What I found was that before we could even ask who was doing the work or whatever research questions that we wanted to do, when you do academic research, you need to define every single term that you put inside of a study. Like, if you take a survey, they shouldn't ask you about your mental health, because mental health isn't a question you can ask in a survey. You can ask about anxiety, you can ask about depression, but you can't just ask about mental health. It's too broad. It doesn't have a definition. Likewise, if you want to say motivation, what does motivation mean? Like, literally every single word when you're doing these research studies needs to be defined for the participants so they know what you mean when they're answering the questions. So we have the whole survey ready to deploy. And I said to Sarah and the research company, I said, well, did we define housework? And they were like, And we all looked at each other and we were like, what is the definition of housework? And then we rewrote the entire survey. Because what we realized was the most basic definition of housework, what is it? What do you think it is? Like, when you think of housework, what do you think of? So we went to Google, because of course they'll know, right? So Google says, housework is work that is done at home. That is not helpful. I cannot even explain to you in one podcast how unhelpful that definition is. I was like, you can't use the same words in the definition. Even I know that from fourth grade writing class. So I was like, okay, what is housework? Like, what is it? And I thought, well, if we're going to ask people about it, I need to define it. And it took me a little bit of time, but I realized it is actually four different kinds of work. So we defined housework as four different kinds of work, and you could go back into these other podcast episodes to really hear how I flesh this out. But the first one is, the most obvious one that probably already came to your mind, is cleaning. Cleaning a house is obviously work that is done at home, right? Like, cleaning is something that you have to do. And in podcast episode 422, I go into cleaning. Organize 365 defines the cleaning portion of housework as anything an outside cleaning company would do. Cleaning the floors, cleaning the bathrooms, cleaning, you know, vacuuming, anything that a normal maid service would come and do in your house, that's how we define that portion of the work that is done at home. That is cleaning. The unique thing about cleaning that distinguishes it from the next kind of work, which is tasks of daily living, is that cleaning is related to the dwelling that you're in. So when you clean something, it is for the good of everyone that is in that dwelling. So if you're a baby living in a house, you know, the parents clean the house for the baby. When you move out of your childhood bedroom and you move into a dorm room or an apartment or condo, you have to clean that dwelling because you're the only person living there at first. And then as you age and you move out of your home and you go into a retirement living or an assisted living facility, there is a service that will come in and will clean that space. The cleaning is for the space and the person lives in that space. The cleaning is not for the person. Again, when you get to make the definitions, you get to make the definitions. So then I was like, okay, there's a second type of cleaning that happens that is not that kind of cleaning. And I call it tasks of daily living. So I've helped people, I told you in the last podcast about creating an IEP binder in order to advocate for students who need an individualized education plan. Often as you get to those education plans in high school, they will account for life skills. And when you look at life skills and you look at the Social Security definition of disability, or I now know they're called ADLs in the medical field, but I didn't know that term. I called it tasks of daily living. They're also called ADLs. So tasks of daily living, they're also kind of cleaning tasks, but they're of the person. So cleaning is of the house. Tasks of daily living are of the person. So if you take a person for their entire lifetime, there are certain housework things that have to be done for that person. Doesn't matter where they live. So a baby, you have to make the bottles. So you have to do food. You have to do their laundry. They have those things. You need to buy the teethers and they need to have things purchased for them, errands, things like that. When you are leaving your house as a young adult and you go to a dorm room or you go to an apartment or you go to a condo, all of a sudden you realize that if you hadn't up until that point, you're responsible for your meal planning, for your food, getting food, preparing food, doing laundry, anything that you need to buy, whether you buy it online or buy it in a store, like all those errands that need to be run, just like daily life. Like, what does it take for you to daily live? You need to buy your own shampoo and deodorant, and you have to shower and you have to brush your teeth and you have to do all of these things that make you a human that other people would like to be close to when we're allowed to do that again. So what used to, I think, be lumped in a lot of people's heads as housework involved both this cleaning and tasks of daily living. And I have purposely broken it out into two things because as you age, and as you move into assisted living or an independent care facility, or as you age and you move out of your family house of origin into your own house, in both of those instances, there are two different kinds of ways that you look at those cleaning tasks and those tasks of daily living. If you move from your childhood home to college and you go to a dorm room, the majority of the cleaning is done by whoever runs the dorm. Like, they have a service that comes in and cleans those bathrooms and cleans those laundry rooms. So that really all you have to clean is your dorm room. And there's not more than one experiment, but many, many experiments every day going on as to, can you get through the whole school year without cleaning that room? And you can. It's a small space. You don't have to do that extra kind of cleaning, but it's not optional about the tasks of daily living. You must do your laundry. You must make your own food. You must go find that. So these are two totally different kinds of work that happen in the home. And the reason I'm defining them differently is so that we could proactively find good systems for more equitable work at home and better discussions about these two kinds of work. So far, I don't think I've said anything that you're like, ooh, groundbreaking, Lisa. Like, you maybe didn't think about those two works as being able to be uncoupled like that so that we can then attack those two on different fronts. But for the most part, you're like, yep. I'd have considered that all housework. I don't know what you're thinking is, you know, mind-boggling here. So the other two kinds of work that I determined happen in the home are completely optional. And they're so optional that our second research study, I'll tell you about in a minute, has even said in past academic studies how optional these kinds of work are. So the first one, which you may have already thought of in related to housework, would be maintenance. Anything used to maintain your home or dwelling. And this one is optional, and it's usually exercised by people who own instead of rent. So if you're renting, the maintenance of the place that you're renting is done by the homeowner or the apartment owner. If you are, you know, using a dorm room and the dorm needs a new roof, it's not your problem. It's the university's problem that the dorm needs a new roof. So if you are renting, then you don't need to do maintenance because you're renting. If you own, then you do maintenance because it's required, but also because it is an investment. So property is an investment of money. And maintenance is an additional infusion of money into that investment so that in the future, the hope is that that investment will be worth more because it was maintained and because you improved it. So maintenance is another kind of housework. It is optional. If you rent, you don't need to do this work. If you own, you don't have to do this work. And often, you know, like I'll always push a couple extra years off before we paint the house. So sometimes you'll defer it a little bit, but eventually you do it because your house is an investment. The last kind of housework that we defined is organizing. And organizing is not cleaning. And organizing, you organize your tasks of daily living, but you don't have to. And you can organize your maintenance schedule, but you don't have to. Organizing is 100% optional. You could get through your entire life and never organize anything or set up a checklist or any of that. And organizing is also something where you could do it in one area, but not in another area, or you can organize one thing, but not the whole entirety. And so organizing, while optional, does have a lot of benefits, whether you rent or own. It is definitely part of housework. Just like maintenance is a current investment of money for a future return of increased money, organization is an investment of time. It takes time to get organized, just like it takes time to plan your week. But if you plan your week, then your week goes more smoothly and you actually end up getting that time back and then some more. Same thing with organizing. When you choose to organize your home and invest the time in learning the skills and deepening your skills and understanding of organizing, it costs you time today, but it gives you back exponential time in the future because you're no longer looking for things and you have a system and everything is maintained more easily. So organization is optional. So that's how we defined housework. And then we deployed our survey, which had so much information. So cleaning was episode 422. Tasks of daily living was episode 424. Organization was episode 426, and maintenance was episode 428. So you could go to organize365.com/research to download all of the answers to the research that we got from that first study. But like I mentioned, Sarah and I figured that, you know what, housework was still a woman's issue and that women were doing the majority of the housework. And we, in episode 430, talked through the article that has been published, and I'll have to look up where it's published, but a literature review and discussion on the role women play in the 21st century home and gender equity. Because in order to do a study, you do a literature review first. So we looked at all the other academic studies that have been done on home organization, and then what we thought our hypothesis was that we were going to learn when we deployed our survey. And we were wrong, we being me. I was wrong. What we found was not that women were doing all of the work at home and men were not doing the work. What we found was everybody is doing the work. And I wish we would have tagged it so that you had spouses, if they were married, taking it together. But, you know, because I'm like, well, everybody can't be doing the work. Like, it can't be like men are saying 63% of men said that they did the majority of the work and 83% of women said that they did the majority of the work. Nobody said they didn't do the majority of the work. And I'm like, okay, you know what I see here? There's so much work to be done that no matter what gender you are, if you are doing the work and you are doing as much work as there is to be done, you can't imagine that your spouse or your partner is doing as much or more than you are, I think is what we're now trying to figure out. Research is fun because it's like a never-ending puzzle. You just get more questions, which I love. We're actually doing 4 more research studies this year, and each study is designed to uncover what's the next thing we missed. And I have kind of tentatively planned out what the next studies are going to be, but just like this one, I was so floored about how wrong I was about what's going on in the household. It flipped my thought process 180 degrees. And what I realized was this. We all think there's less work to be done at home than there is. And we all are working in our jobs and in our passion projects and at home. And inside every one of us is a 12-year-old child that just wants to get their room clean so they can go play on the weekend. And what we found is there's a lot of cleaning and work to be done so that we can go play, to the point that it's never really done. So we never know when we're allowed to go out and play. And I'm like, oh, this is bigger than I thought. Additionally, As I've been sharing our research with different Fortune 500 companies, I've come across men and women, and they are resonating with all this research. And I was specifically speaking to a small group of men and women, and I said that, you know, what we're trying to do here is explain and understand what the work is that's being done at home. So A, we can reduce as much as possible. And B, so we can articulate what the work is so that it can, C, be shared amongst everybody that lives in the home. And up until this point, the research that I have read is more like the research I thought I was doing, like, hey, it's your fault, so get in here and help me do this. But I think the truth of the matter is this. We hadn't defined housework, so we didn't even really understand the amount of work that we were doing. And when you do define housework and you look at the amount of work that there is, you're like a second grader that's looking at a big, long list of math that doesn't like math and goes, oh my gosh, there are too many problems. I'm never going to get through all this. And so I was talking to this small group and I said this. I said, you know, here's where I think we are in this discussion as a society. For the last couple of decades, women have been saying to men in corporate America, you need to hold the door open for me. You need to invite me to the table. You need to explain to me the rules here. You need to have more equitable and inclusion inside of all these corporations of diverse thought, of different genders, of different races, of different ethnicities. And it has been put upon those that are in power to hold the door open for others. And in Cincinnati, what I have found as a female business owner is that every man I've run into holds the door open and then four more that I didn't even know were closed. And they say, oh, yeah, here's the answer to this question. Here's who you need to know. Oh, and by the way, I want to connect you to this person. And have you thought about this? And could I help you with that? Like I have yet to run into a man in Cincinnati or in my family who, when I express what I need next, doesn't say, oh yeah, here's how you do that. And by the way, you may not know, but here are the next three things you're going to need also. And can I please help you with those? Like they're very helpful. And I feel like we are finally at home getting to a point where women are able to better articulate what the actual work is that's being done at home, that they are doing intuitively or instinctively, that they cannot have men help them with because they haven't been able to articulate what it is they do. Like they just, like how many times have you seen the meme where the man says he's going to go to bed? And he gets up and goes to bed. And a woman says she's going to go to bed. And she gets up and she moves the laundry and she does the dishes and she picks up the house and she feeds the cat and she does what, and then she goes to bed, right? And it's just kind of, and I am saying man and woman, and I realize that there is a lot of men who are taking on more primary work at home. But I'm calling out women right now and saying, we have to be able to articulate what is the work that we need help with so that we can have a discussion about if we should even be doing it at all. Because a lot of times, ladies, we do things that we don't need to do anymore. Case in point, COVID taught me one good thing. When COVID started, we had somebody cleaning our house at the time. Obviously, can't do that when you're in a shutdown, right? So we were locked down for obviously more than 7 weeks because at the 7 week mark, all of a sudden you could write your name in every single surface on our house. And I was like, oh, great. 7 weeks. That's how long it takes for dust to accumulate to the point that you can write your name in it. So dusting needs to occur every 6 weeks in my home. Does not need to happen every week, every other week, not even once a month. So if you're dusting more than every 6 weeks, do you need to? My answer is no, we do not. So number one, let's eliminate as much as possible and stop keeping our 1950s mentality of what housework looks like and what done looks like and what Pinterest perfect is. Let's rewrite our excellence level and what done is good enough. Like what is our good enough level? Because the president's not coming over, FYI. And the Pope isn't leaving Italy. So neither of those people are coming to your house. We don't have to have that level of cleanliness unless it's your passion project and you really like it. I just like my house to be good enough. Secondly, just like in corporate America, women are asking for men to hold open the door, and I'm finding that they will hold open the door. I just have to ask the right people and I have to ask the right questions. And that's the hardest part, I think, right now as being a female entrepreneur, is that I don't know what I don't know. I don't have a business degree. I have an education degree. So I don't even know what I should be asking until I listen to a podcast. I go, well, that's so obvious. Why didn't I ask that? then I'll ask somebody, they're like, oh, yeah, you go do and you do this. I don't know because I didn't have a business degree and I don't, whatever. Same thing is happening at home. If you have not been the person that is primarily responsible for the household and you're not the one that's cleaning and doing the tasks of daily living and the organizing and the maintenance, you don't know what you don't know. Like, you don't know. How would you know that that's how it's done? There's no manual. There's no course you're taking. There's no, how would you know? And so part of this research that we're doing is defining what does it look like? So we've just launched our second study, just came back. I haven't gotten the data yet, but the research team is already looking at it. Our second study has now defined what is organization? Okay, great question. What is home organization to you? What do you think it means to be organized at home? Kind of like asking you, what is housework, right? Like, you guys are giving different answers. So I said, okay, when I get down to it, what is home organization? If I broke it into four categories, what is home organization? It is these areas. It is your personal organization, your car, your backpack, your wallet, your purse, your clothes, your bedroom. That's all personal organization. Second would be family and communal spaces, kitchens, living rooms, dining rooms, those spaces that you or your family go in together or you have family and friends over into. Third would be storage spaces, garages, basements, attics, sheds, offsite storage. And then fourth is paper organization. And the hardest thing about organizing is if you were going to organize your first floor, like if I was going to organize my first floor of my house, that's where I have laundry, personal organization, and garage, storage organization, and family room and kitchen, which is communal organization. So three different kinds of organization on the same floor. And we think that organizing that first floor of your house is all the same kind of organization. It's not. I'm gonna eventually show you that it's not. And so the survey that we're doing now is asking people, do they have these different areas organized? So just like in our last study, I had to have a hypothesis. My hypothesis for this study in our paper that we're writing, or we wrote in order to get the IRB, is that we have Swiss cheese organization. So Swiss cheese organization comes from my kids went to a learning disability school, and the preponderance of kids there also had ADHD. So I got to learn a lot about ADHD from ADHD experts. And the school would often say that ADHD causes Swiss cheese learning in children. And how it causes Swiss cheese learning is that one day your student will know all their shapes, and then the next day they'll know 3 out of 4, and then the next day they'll know 3 out of 4, but they're a different 3 out of 4, and then the last day they know 4 out of 4 again. It's because in the executive functioning, as it is developing, it's hard for students who have ADHD to reach into their memory banks and pull out the information they know. It's in there somewhere, but it's not on the tip of their tongue. They can't remember it every single day the same way. And what I think we're going to find in our research is that people have Swiss cheese organization, meaning that when you look at your personal organization, my car and my wallet and my backpack are great, my bedroom is a hot mess, and my closet is so-so. When I look at my family spaces, the kitchen is great, the family room is a hot mess, and I don't even know what's in the dining room drawers. When I look at storage, my storage room is good, but my garage is not good. And so you have, and so then when you say, are you organized? You go, yeah, kind of, I guess, kind of. And so then we looked at like, okay, so who has already done research on home organization, or what have they already found in the area of home organization? I hope you're sitting down. What most academic research has shown, and multiple studies have shown, is that men view home organization as an optional hobby for women. It's not seen as essential, as a time saver, as how you would run an efficient organization. Yet if you look at any business or organization, like productivity and organization is at the top of the list. Like, how do we declutter? How do we streamline? How do we increase communication? How are we productive? How do we organize our team? How do we organize our meetings? How do we organize all these things? Yet at home, it is viewed as an optional hobby for women. And as long as we keep saying that home organization, which is the thing that's going to get you more time and reduce the amount of work that you're doing in housework, is optional and it's a hobby and it's for women, then we aren't going to be able to invite in other genders in order to help us get better organizational structures at home so that we're doing less, so that we have more time to do what we're uniquely created to do. So before I end, I'll just throw out a couple of the statistics that we found from the organization that we've done, from the first research study that we've already done. The best statistic that I got out of our first research study was this. 84% of Americans and 86% of women believe organization is a learnable skill. Hallelujah! Drop the mic. Like, great. So we all know that it is learnable. It is a skill, and we believe we can get it. So if that's the case, then it's just a matter of defining it, explaining it, and teaching it, and we'll have more and more and more people get organized. And the more people get organized, the more they have time to help me with this research to figure out how to get more people organized. Also, inside of that research, we found as we divided out tasks of daily living and cleaning, and people had to answer both of those questions, we found that there was a difference in how men and women felt after they had completed their housework. There wasn't a difference in men or women doing the housework, but it was how they felt when they were done. And how women felt when they were done getting their housework done, they felt accomplished, and then they felt relieved. Men felt accomplished, and then they felt relaxed. Women didn't quite get to that relaxed state that men get to. They felt relieved, like, oh, okay, I'm done for today. I can do it again tomorrow. Whereas men were like, relax, okay, the work is done. Now I can relax, I can enjoy. It's two totally different feelings that come from getting your housework done. And 70% of women, compared to 64% of men, said they are constantly trying to improve the look of their home. So 64% of men, 70% of women, like it's more than half in both, constantly trying to improve the look of their home. That means you're looking around your house and you're going, oh, that needs to be fixed. That needs to be done. Do you do that? I do. I'm like, oh, could I just enjoy it for like a day without looking at my house and going, oh, need time to paint the baseboards. Oh, need to have the carpets cleaned. Oh, need to pick that up. Yep, need to finish that project. Like, that's how we walk through our houses. And it would be so great if all of us could get our housework done and feel relaxed and relieved and be able to enjoy the homes that we're in, which is what I am trying to do. So much more I could share. Oh my gosh, so much more. Also in that first study, we talked about paper organization. I'll just touch on this here. You can go ahead and go on over into the podcast archives and into our research page if you want to hear more. But two episodes ago, when I talked about the paper solution and how I went to New York in 2017, and the basic feeling was that we don't have paper and we don't need to get it organized. And then I went back in 2019 and they were like, yes, we're ready for the paper solution book, which we published in 2020. Now that I did my research in 2021, we are seeing in the research that everyone is starting to realize that, okay, this paper is not going away, that we definitely have paper and we need a solution for it. And specifically, millennials are really starting to feel the paper piles piling up around them as they are hitting the 40-year-old mark. 55% of millennials in our survey said they have too much loose paper in their homes. And in every single category that I asked questions about in paper, it was the millennials that were most overwhelmed. So when I asked, how often do you experience each of these issues in your home? Mental piles. 47% of women and 40% of men always or often are experiencing mental piles. You know, I talked about in a couple of podcast episodes that we are using our brains as mental to-do lists. And when you can write those thoughts on paper, then they become less emotional and actionable, and they can be referenced or actionable or deleted or delegated or deferred or whatever you want to do with them. But it's the idea of taking those mental piles and putting them in paperwork. And then we explained what a Sunday basket is, and we explained what the binder solution was that would ditch the filing cabinet. And in both cases, millennials, and especially millennial men, were very interested in the solutions that we had to offer. 70% of millennials said that the Sunday basket would solve their mental piles and get them out of their head and into a basket. 64% of millennials said they are unable to find important papers. 65% said they have unorganized reference papers. 65% said they have unorganized notes, supplies, and ideas for unfinished projects. And 66% said they have kitchen counter paper piles. So when they looked at it and they heard about the Sunday basket, millennials said 59% said that the Sunday basket would solve the problem of unorganized notes, supplies, and ideas for unfinished projects. 57% said it would solve the problem for mental piles, and 62% said it would solve their problem for kitchen paper files. And then when we talked about ditching the filing cabinet and using binders, 62% of millennials said that would help them be able to find important papers, and 66% said it would help them to find and organize their reference papers. So much, much more research to come, many more statistics still to come out of our first research study. Our second one is in data analysis right now. We plan on doing three more in 2022. So by the time we get to 2023, we should have five Organized 365 research studies done with statistics out there so that we can live out our vision, which is to do research and targeted surveys and data analysis to bring to light the organizational needs of individuals. And through podcast conversations and thought leadership, we will shape and develop the discussion about the stuff in American homes. As a trusted leader in home and paper organization, Organize 365 will be the go-to resource for busy individuals, future professional organizers, home organizational brands, and the media. And Organize 365 will help individuals finally get organized with home and paper organization courses and products that combine teaching and applications of practical organization principles. So if you are a professional organizer, we would love to partner with you in the certification program. If you are an employee of a home organizational brand, we would love to partner with you in our research and getting our message out. If you are connected to the media and this is interesting to you, we would love to submit articles, be interviewed in order to have this discussion, because that is how we're going to reach the busy individuals. You're listening to the podcast. I love podcasts, but not everyone listens to podcasts. And this is a message that we need to get out to everyone, because people are looking for a solution. They understand that organization is a learnable skill. And I know from my in-home professional organization days, it's not that people don't believe you can learn the skill of organization. They just believe that they can't, that it's for everyone else except for them. And you maybe have been at that place in your life as well. When you were organized before, became unorganized, and felt very out of control and very reactive, and then got your organization back, and now you feel more powerful and in control and confident and less anxious and less depressed. Or maybe you still are thinking, oh, I mean, I like listening to Lisa, and she's so peppy. She makes it seem so possible, but I really just don't know if I can. Like, I know people can get organized, but maybe it's not me. That's not true. Everyone can learn. You know what I have said? I'm a teacher. Students cannot fail to learn. Only teachers can fail to teach. I've been saying that since the first year that I taught school to teachers of children that were disadvantaged in a school district that was failing first graders. And that is what I still believe. If you, using the Organize 365 resources, cannot get organized, then I need to do better. I need to come up with another way to help you, to teach you, to motivate you, to provide the encouragement. You can learn to get organized. So if organization is learnable, and thousands of people have done it through Organize 365, and these systems work, then we need to get the message out there. And we need to encourage and motivate others to get organized, because it is through organization that you get extra time, and time is what we all need more of.